scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all. Aguilla's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, happy Friday. Let's get it going.
Happy Friday.
Oh, there's somebody. Oh, that is the most personality Wes Gilbertson has ever shown in his life. I didn't know you had it in you.
Personality? No, me neither. I'm trying something new today. Personality.
Last show of
personality.
The week. Welcome. It's Steinberg and
Wes.
Can
I get out of here now?
It feels like a Friday, doesn't it? You still have like 56 minutes to go. You stay right there, young man. Welcome. It is a Friday, April 25th. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson. This hour of Flames Talk underway from our Groundworks downtown studio. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Text line open at 960-960. Thanks for being along with us. And, you know, I thought on Thursday's show, I really enjoyed our conversation with our goaltending expert, Kevin Woodley.
Always
great insight. Like, you talk to somebody who knows about the position and you understand how much you don't know about the position. And some of the things that he notices that I don't know a thing about goaltending, but I do know the Flames have a very good goaltender by the name of Dustin Wolf, who just turned 24 last week. And I think at the very least, there is going to be some interesting conversations in the Flames hockey operations office this summer about what the future looks like for Dustin Wolf. Not the future in terms of will he be here or won't he be here, but just how long are you going to have him locked up and under contract for as early as July 1st? So here's the situation. We'll find out on Monday, May 5th. So a week from this Monday, we'll find out whether or not Dustin Wolf is a Calder Trophy finalist. He better be. Like, it would be a complete stunner if he's not a Calder Trophy finalist.
Yeah, we already know the answer to that, don't we?
I think so, yeah. But you just never, again,
it's really down
300 voters. You just never quite know. But I think it would be an absolute stunner if Wolf is not one of the three Calder Trophy finalists a week from Monday.
Yes. I can only speak for one voter, but I would say that's an accurate assessment.
Well, I know he was on your ballot. I know he was on Eric Francis's ballot. I know he was on Frank Saravalli's ballot. So if we're going based on sample size, he's on 100% of balance so far. I can't imagine even somebody in Tampa Bay or Dallas or wherever not being as familiar. I can't imagine somebody not having Wolf on their ballot.
It is going to be I think everybody knows this already. It's going to be very difficult for Dustin Wolf to win the Calder based on the way Lane Hutson sort of surged in the latter stages of the season. I do think that we're ultimately talking about Dustin Wolf as the runner-up for the Calder Trophy when all of those 300 votes are tabulated.
You think he'll be ahead of Celebrini?
I do. Okay. Yeah, I do. I'm actually not totally convinced. Well, I think, and he was on my ballot, I'm not totally convinced Celebrini will finish ahead of Matvei Michkov.
Okay. Interesting. I think he should.
I do as well. I just, you know, bias people talk about sometimes?
East Coast?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
It's probably still Celebrini, but
I think you can make a very salient argument that Celebrini was the best rookie in the NHL this year, which is what the Calder Trophy is. The same way you can make the argument, I think Wolf should win it. I don't think he will, but I think he should. And I think Hutson will win it, and I think that he should win it as well. Like, honestly, it's hard to...
Yeah.
It would be hard to say there's an injustice if any one of those three guys wins it, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Yeah, and when I start to look at Dustin Wolf versus Lane Hutson, and I'm probably not supposed to say this, but I will anyways. Dustin Wolf is number one on my Calder Trophy ballot.
Yep.
I do expect ultimately that won't be the way the broader vote goes, but that's who I have number one because I watched him really lift a team to heights that none of us thought possible this year. Now, what I will say is a lot of the arguments for Dustin Wolf also apply to Lane Hutson. And by that, I just mean, and I know that we weren't planning to talk Calder, so I'll keep this.
No, no, it's good.
I'll keep this tight, but you know, you could say,
Wes,
well,
it's the off season. Yeah. If you can pull 10 minutes out of anything, I'm happy. Like if I have to talk to Shan for 10 minutes on the air, I'll do it.
I don't think we need to get that desperate today. Yeah.
August. We'll wait till August for that.
So you look at Dustin Wolf and you say, well, he's doing things as a rookie that you're not supposed to do at his position. Well, that applies to Lane Hutson as well, right? You look at Dustin Wolf and you say, well, he's one of the biggest reasons that a team that was supposed to go nowhere had a much better season than anticipated. Well, that also applies to Lane Hutson. There's just a lot of things. All the cases for Dustin Wolf also, I think, apply to Lane Hutson. And when you factor in where he's playing, when you factor in the history that he made, when you factor in the fact the Montreal Canadiens are currently playing a first-round playoff series, I think it ultimately leans Hutson.
So we'll find all that out on May 5th. And then on July 1st, Dustin Wolf, Calder Trophy finalist. I'm calling it right here. I'm going on a limb. Calder Trophy finalist, Dustin Wolf. On July 1st, he'll be eligible to sign a contract extension because at that point, he'll have 1 year left on the two-year deal that he signed last summer. And goodness, that is a fascinating conversation to dive into in terms of whether or not this summer is the right time to sign a Dustin Wolf extension. If it is the right time, what does that extension look like? How much money is attached to it on a yearly basis? And how long is that contract term? And honestly, I'm really fascinated to see what the text line has to say at 960-960. Text line open for you if you're listening live. There are so many questions, so many nuances, so many things to consider when you talk about Wolf and what his next contract is going to look like. But I think you can make a really, really strong argument for extending him with term as early as Canada Day. Now, do I think that that's going to happen? No, I do not. I don't anticipate cracking the airwaves on July 1 and having a Yegor Sharangovich-like extension right there on the table, right? Like, the Sharangovich extension was announced 9 minutes into free agency last year. I don't think we're going to see that with Wolf. But I do think that between now and the beginning of next season, there's plenty of reason to, at the very least, approach the extension talks with Wolf and approach long-term extension talks with him. Because as much as we know goaltending is a fickle position, as much as I am kind of leery most of the time when it comes to extending or signing goalies to large terms, boy, if you're the Flames, you know this guy. They trust this guy. They believe in him. They drafted him. They watched him come up all through the ranks, defy all expectations in the Western League and the American League, and now in the best league in the world, was a top 10, 15 goaltender in the NHL as a 23-year-old rookie this year. And while I know that, and Kevin Woodley always talks about how progression isn't linear when it comes to this position, and he's right. It is the least linear progression you'll see. But I just don't know how you go wrong with the belief I have, and certainly the belief the Flames should have, and I believe do have, in Dustin Wolf. I don't know how you go wrong on a long-term extension. I really, really don't. And I would be, at the very least, putting some money on the table that Wolf and his camp would be like, whoa, wait a second, we need to really consider this, as opposed to pushing it to the side and say, yeah, we'll talk to you next summer. That's where I am when it comes to Dustin Wolf.
Yeah, usually when it comes to spending other people's money, I defer to Aaron Vickers, but
oof. Poor guy's not even here.
But let me weigh in on this one.
I didn't know that you could cover the scales on the alligator arms quite like
that. Is that dust
on the wall?
Is that that's weird. Has it been opened?
Is that a spider web?
Is that plastic wrap? You know, You know, you got to scratch that protective coat off the back of your Visa card.
You're supposed to sign it, too.
Vixie, we love you if you're listening.
He probably is.
Okay, so I absolutely agree that you'd be looking to make a long-term offer to Dustin Wolf. It makes too much sense. He is the backbone of this team already. He's only going to continue to be the backbone of this team moving forward. Let me just sort of devil's advocate it for you.
Hit me.
The fear, as we heard, maybe not fear, but what you're always keeping in mind, as we heard from Kevin Woodley yesterday, is just there's some risk in going long-term with goalies.
Right? With
anybody, but...
With any goalie.
Yeah, with any player, I'm sure. But with goalies especially, there's a hesitation to go long-term. And I wonder if, with the Flames... Like, I think it's too late to get a bargain on Dustin Wolf. I think it's too late to not be paying a premium for Dustin Wolf. And that's why I wonder, okay, well, 8 years, yeah, makes perfect sense. He's the backbone of your team. You buy as many UFA years as possible. And yet what I wonder is, if you're already paying a premium, if there is risk in going long-term, do you dial it back just a little? Do you know what I mean? Like, here, this is probably risky because I wasn't in debate club, but
neither was I.
Oh, okay. Well, then we're on even footing. Like,
I'll just yell at you and interrupt you.
You play Craig Conroy here,
yeah,
and
okay,
I'll be
it.
Dustin Wolf's agent.
Sure.
Pat Brisson, who, by the way, is
quite a hound.
Yes.
Maybe the best in the business.
So what do you got for me?
I'm Craig Conroy.
Yeah.
I'd put something, I would, if I'm the Flames, I would put something in excess of $60 million on the table over 8 years and make you turn it down, is what I would do. And that's not out of, like, I could see Wolf being like, yeah, you know what, thank you. That's a really generous offer. We think that we'll be better served if we do this. But I would do something like 8x8, which is 64 million times table. Yeah, 64
yeah.
million. Or even 8x8.5, which would be 68 million bucks. Like, I would put something between 60 and 70 million dollars on the table and say, okay, Dustin, this is how much we think of you. It's on you. Like, we've got this type of money on the table for you. Are you willing to take it, or do you want to bet on yourself? We respect it either way. If you want to bet on yourself, we'll maybe reconvene in January or February.
Sure.
And think about a 2-year bridge at like 2x5, 2x5.5. And then we can, you know, reset in a few years.
And potentially you're coming in with a higher offer than I maybe thought you were going to. Because if I'm Pat Brisson, if I'm Dustin Wolf's agent, I'm telling Craig Conroy, well, the starting point, like just where we start discussions, is the 8x8.25 that Jeremy Swayman signed last fall. As a 25-year-old, same age that Dustin Wolf will be when he begins his next deal,
yep.
As a guy who had been picked as the goalie of the future in his market, as a guy with fairly similar numbers the season he signed, and I'm talking just the obvious counting stats, fairly similar goals against average and save percentage to what Dustin Wolf put up, in a tougher environment this past season.
Yep.
And so I'm telling you that, like, my bare minimum where I'm starting this discussion is 8x8.25.
Fair. And if I'm the Flames, I'd be willing to do that.
Yeah. And I wouldn't dispute it. I don't know that, and especially with how grateful Dustin Wolf has always been for the opportunities getting in Calgary, I don't know that if this comes out on July 5th as a bridge contract, that there's reason to, and it wouldn't be, I suppose, on July 5th. But let's say Dustin Wolf says, I'll just play out this deal. You guys wanted, he's a restricted free agent. There's no concern about him.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere.
Going anywhere
at the end of this contract.
And so I wouldn't panic if it turns out to be a bridge, because I just see, regardless, Dustin Wolf being around for a long, long time. And if it means that you're going to ultimately pay a higher cap hit, but maybe you lessen some of the risk that comes with signing a goalie to an 8-year deal, I don't necessarily think that's something that should or would be viewed as a terrible development for the Flames. Can you get them signed for 8? If you can, great. But, you know, even right now, do the Boston Bruins love the Swayman deal for 7 more years? I think they're still good with it, but are they already wondering?
And I mean, I know that Swayman had a rough year this
right.
year, but also
I don't
a
think
a little bit of a pass because it was a holdout and he missed all the training camp and all the preseason,
right.
and so on and so forth.
And wound up behind a team that wasn't nearly as
strong
as we thought. And certainly
the other problem with the bridge deal is that mm-hmm. because he'll be 25 at the end of this.
Yeah.
You got to worry about walking him to unrestricted free
sure.
agency, which I think also plays into this conversation
yeah.
as well. Cause I think a 2-year deal would walk him to unrestricted, like another 2 years
yeah.
after he expires would walk him right to UFA.
Yeah. If you're going bridge, I think it has to be,
you got to buy at least one.
Yeah.
You either got to do 1 year
yeah.
or 3 years.
Yeah.
Do you think 2 would walk him to UFA? I think off the top of my head.
Do you think in any way, you know, it was a bit of a surprise, and ultimately it doesn't matter because he hasn't been in the AHL. The Flames negotiated Dustin Wolf into taking a 2-way deal on this current contract.
Yep. They played hardball.
And so while I don't think that there's animosity from that, it does set the tone for the Wolf camp to play a little bit of hardball now, does it not?
Absolutely. As you should.
Like, right?
As a player, you should play hardball.
Yeah.
Because teams will screw you. They will.
Yeah.
Like, teams will use all the leverage they possibly have to try to get a good deal.
Yeah. And they should, too.
Absolutely. It's
yeah.
a business.
That being said, it sets up an interesting negotiation.
I've wondered to myself, like, okay, putting myself in Dustin's shoes, do you think about, because I think about, okay, if you sign an 8-year deal, that puts you at 33 when it expires.
Yeah.
Then what? But what if you sign a 6-year deal?
Yeah. 5 or 6 seems ideal for the player in this case.
And because then all of a sudden you can sign another 5 or 6 after that.
Yeah.
Like, look what Hellebuck just did. Like, if you're Dustin Wolf, you think that you're, like, you and Pat Brisson think you're one of the best goaltenders on the planet, which you are,
mm-hmm.
and you should be going about your business as if, okay, over the course of the career, we believe this guy is going to be in the Vezina Trophy conversation on a yearly basis, and this is going to be one of the best goalies in the NHL over the course of his career, so let's try to maximize. And that's why I wonder if, when it's all said and done, as much as I'm sure the Flames would love an 8-year deal, and maybe the Wolf camp would love to go a little bit shorter, if you could find somewhere in the middle and hit that 6-year deal, 6 times 7.5, 6 times 8, something like that, that might be the ideal for both sides,
mm-hmm.
because it has you
mitigate
expiring.
Some risk.
It mitigates some risk on the Flames side of
yep.
things. And it has you as the player expiring before your 30th birthday, or right around your 30th birthday, sorry.
Yeah.
Be 30, 31. And then you have another, like, goalies play. Like, look at guys who are still playing right now and their ages. And so I don't think it's crazy that a 31-year-old Dustin Wolf could then sign another 5 or 6 year deal after that with the cap even higher. And now all of a sudden you've been able to negotiate 2 big money contracts for 12 or 11 years. And that, I think, from a career earnings perspective,
mm-hmm.
might be the best thing for Wolf. And for the Flames, well, you mitigate a little bit of risk. You give yourself a little bit of an out at the end. You're not buying as many UFA years, so the dollar figure is a little bit less. So I don't know. I feel like a six-year deal, and I keep going back to that Jordan Binnington deal that he signed. It wasn't right after they won the Stanley Cup. It was the season afterwards. But he signed a 6x6, and I don't think at any point, even though Binnington has had some rough stretches, I don't think there has been one single second that Doug Armstrong says to himself, man, I wish we wouldn't have signed Binnington to a 6x6.
Right.
And the dollar figure will have to be higher because of inflation and because of the way the cap has gone. So what if it's 7.5? Like, I think Binnington signed his in 20 or 21. So it's been 4 or 5 years. So what if it's $1.5 million on the AAV makes up for the inflation, and now you're, what would that be, $45 million. Six years, $45 million, and that's a $7.5 million cap hit.
I mean, you're not getting Dustin Wolf for less than eight.
Okay, 6x8 then.
Yeah.
Whatever the case may be.
And here's I guess what's sort of important to keep in mind. The Flames are going to be fine with paying whatever Dustin Wolf proves to be worth. Like, this is not the same as you kind of look down the stretch and say, well, you know, Morgan Frost didn't score as much as they thought he would after he arrived in the trade. And the sort of positive side of that is maybe it saves you a little bit of money on his next deal, right? Connor Zeri did not, even when he was healthy, take the offensive step that we thought he was capable of. We're going to bridge him most likely, but maybe it saves us a little bit of money. If Dustin Wolf enters next season and hasn't been extended yet, again, not a big deal because he'll just be heading still into RFA.
Yep.
But if Dustin Wolf takes a step back, you don't say, oh, thank goodness it saves us some money, because it really sewers your team in a lot of ways. And that's where the goalie position is so unique. Craig Conroy would much rather pay an extra X million dollars per year than have Dustin Wolf take a step backward. And then you're maybe looking at some of the questions that you hoped you were done with next season.
Yeah.
And I know you and I have been big believers in Dustin Wolf for a long time, and neither of us expect a step backwards. But there's
always that risk with this position.
Absolutely there is.
You just never know what's coming. And whether it's Carey Price or Henrik Lundqvist or Connor Hellebuck or like the best, Andrei Vasilevskiy, the best in the world have down years. The best in the world have a year where they're flirting with 900 as opposed to 920.
Yeah, and the best in the world are able to come back out of it.
Yeah.
And there's other guys who, while they haven't become irrelevant by any stretch, they've sort of entered the pack of, how's your goaltending?
Yeah,
it's fine. And we don't, again, I shouldn't say we, I'll just speak for myself, but I know you feel the same way. I'm not expecting Dustin Wolf to take that step backwards, but at this position, like, go scan the list of goalie names who have been Calder Trophy candidates
and have fallen off.
It's not exactly the okay rocket ship guaranteed to have success. And so I think in that case, if it doesn't end up being the longest of long-term deals, it's not, if you have to pay a little more down the road, but you've mitigated a bit of the risk, I don't think that's the worst thing.
It's a risk I'd be willing to take.
Yeah.
As long as I could possibly get, it's a risk I'd be willing to take, but we'll see. And I want to.
What if it's
line?
So if it's 8 years and it has to start with a 9
all day.
Yeah.
Yep. I'd still do it. I really would, because
what about a 10?
That might be a little,
you're starting to get a little,
but I don't think you would have to go to 10 to get 8 years at this point. I think if you throw $72 million on the table, there's a pretty good chance Dustin Wolf takes.
I guess the question is, if Swayman just went eight over, or 66 over eight, and the percentage of the cap is going up by X amount, what?
I think the Swayman deal is the perfect comparable.
It is the perfect comparable because of age, the numbers are similar, and it's not like we're not going back in time 3 years to do the Swayman deal. We're going back 6 months.
Yeah.
Like it is. Stop me, buddy, if I'm forgetting something here, but it really is the last comparable on the market, isn't it?
100%.
Yeah.
What's the cap number next year?
Oh, I couldn't even.
jumped to
100?
No, it jumps to like 92, I think, next year. Just want to do the quick math on
95.5.
And what was it this year? Love this on the air.
Yeah, this is great.
It was 88 this year, wasn't it?
That sounds right. Yeah, 88.
Okay, so he
because the Flames only had $1 billion in cap space and never paid the closest attention to it.
So he was 9.4% of the cap on $88 million.
But hang on.
So I'm just $95 million next year?
Yeah, but let me stop you because it's 104 in 26-27, which is
when it would start?
Which is when the deal would start.
So 104 point times 0.94. Nope. 0.094.
We can do more calculator math on the air. If you guys are loving this, please text in.
From a cap percentage,
yeah,
it would be about 9.5 to 9.75, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, when we started this conversation, I didn't see you starting in the eights, and I think you and I are very much on the same page. That's where you got to be hanging out to even start this conversation. Yep.
This says I'd do 8 years at $7 million per year. Don't think there's a chance you'd get that. I really don't. This from Joe Pat. I think Wolf's the real deal, but I would let him play out his current contract. Look at that Mason guy in Columbus. Great year. Then he fell off the face of the earth. That was also 15 years ago. More than that.
Still a relevant comparable in a guy who absolutely took the league by storm as a rookie.
And then dropped.
Didn't turn out to be the superstar that. And I really don't think that's the case with Dustin Wolf, but I see where
Joe
is coming from.
Heath says, guys, so of course the Flames should be trying to get Dustin Wolf to a max term, but what that dollar amount per year will be is the real question. What'll actually happen is that he'll sign a bridge because then he can go out and be amazing and then sign an absolutely colossal deal the next time around, and that could very well happen. Probably would end up being a three-year bridge. This says I'm stuck between a bridge or locking him up for as long as possible. 8x8 could be a steal down the road, but how many times have we seen a big contract kill a player's desire to keep pushing hard? I don't think that is a worry in any way, shape, or form with Wolf. I don't think he's wired that way. This from Patrick. I understand the goalies don't play as many games as defensemen, but Hudson played 84 games this year, and he's still playing, and Dustin played 53, so it's not the be-all and end-all factor, but it's something to consider. That's about the Calder. This says, if you're the Flames and can sign Wolf for 8 years for anywhere between 8 to 8.5, that'll feel like a steal with the cap going nowhere but up. And if Wolf continues on his current progression, his contract's only going to get more expensive if he signs multiple short-term bridge deals. Scotty in Lethbridge says, one reason to avoid a long-term deal, Jonathan Huberdeau. Different in my eyes because of the age. This says Wolf has played one season, was protected. Flames have another year. He hasn't earned 8x8, let alone more. That's crazy talk. 5x6, maybe. You guys are insane. I don't think we are. I think that locking up your best player to a deal to make sure he's here,
yeah.
I don't think that that's insane at all.
Well, and I just think 5x6 is no thanks. Just give us the 2-year deal and we'll see where this goes.
Qualify us. We'll see where they like.
And I do want to hit quickly on the one text. And so before somebody mentioned Huberdeau, there was a
The Hudson conversation.
Yeah, no, guys get the big contract, and then
yeah.
I think because the big contract for Wolf is not his last contract. It's not even his last home run contract. I think even that if I don't view Dustin Wolf as being a guy who's motivated by loot, but even if he was, there's reason to keep going there.
It's Pat and Wes. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk, and we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio this hour. Groundworks, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is a Friday edition of the program with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg, and it is time for the Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport, and it is our final Daily Flames roundtable of the season. We will return with the Daily Flames Roundtable in September once we're into training camp and the preseason. But with the regular season now just over a week old from being complete, this is our final DFRT of the season as Derek Wills joins us as well to complete this final Daily Flames Roundtable of the 24-25 campaign. And gents, I thought we'd just spend the next 20 minutes or however long looking ahead to next season. And starting with this, you know, we saw a lot of really exciting things this year from certain players who took big steps forward and, you know, or burst onto the scene and were huge parts of Calgary's success. So guys, as we project to next season, veteran, young player, zero NHL experience, some, however you want to look at this, give us one player that you're really excited to watch and see where they're at next season.
Well, for me, I'm torn between two guys. And if you guys don't name my other guy, I'll circle back to him at the end of this conversation. But I'm going to go with a guy who might not even play a full season for the Flames in 2025, 2026. But I think they're going to give him every opportunity to be a full-time NHLer. And that is Zane Parekh. I mean, for me, the best prospect the team has had, certainly since Matthew Tkachuk, and you might be able to go even further back than that to Sam Bennett, Johnny Gaudreau. You know, I'd put him right up there with all of those guys with what he's accomplished to this point in his career. I mean, when you've done something that no one has done since Bobby Orr, I think it's safe to say you're a pretty special player. So Zane Parekh being the first Ontario Hockey League defenseman to score 30-plus goals in back-to-back seasons since number four, I think that speaks volumes about how excited Flames fans should be about this prospect. And it didn't hurt that he played in his first NHL game and scored his first NHL goal in game 82 against the Kings last Thursday. But for me, and I said it going into that game, I wasn't going to really go one way or the other on a player. If he had a really good game or a really bad game, if I was excited about a player, I wasn't going to let that move the needle for me all that much. But adds a little bit more hype when he scores goal one in game one. But, you know, I think it's safe to say that he is going to be the Ontario Hockey League's most outstanding defenseman for a second straight season. I think it's safe to say he's going to be the Canadian Hockey League's defenseman of the year for a second straight season. And he looked like he fit in, even more than that. But he certainly didn't look out of place without the puck or defensively. And when he had the puck on his stick, he looked like a pretty special player in that meaningless game number 82 against the Kings just over a week ago. So it's going to be a really important offseason for Zane Parekh. I think he would tell you and the team would tell you he's got to get a little bit stronger during the offseason to put himself in a great spot to make this team coming out of training camp in the preseason. But because they can't send him to the American Hockey League, I think they're going to give him every opportunity to be a National Hockey League player next season. I don't think going back to junior is going to help Zane Parekh to continue to develop. I think he needs to play pro hockey. The only place he can do that's in the NHL. So I'm excited to see if he'll be a full-time NHLer next season.
Willsy, I absolutely share your intrigue and excitement about what Zane Parekh will do and what I assume is going to be a full season at the NHL. I do just want to point one thing out, and I was surprised to see it, and I'm sure you're going to be surprised to hear it. Sam Dickinson was named the OHL's Defenseman of the Year yesterday.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, and all good. I just wanted to bring it up because I sort of had the same reaction, like, oh, geez, I kind of thought Zane Parekh was a no-brainer there. It doesn't change the conversation at all, but, you know, FYI, I suppose, for those listening, apparently Zane Parekh, despite 107 points, is not winning that award this year. I'm going to go with a different guy, you know, instead of repeating all the reasons you're excited to see Parekh, even though I share them, and that's Connor Zary for me, guys. And I was thinking about this and thinking back to what made Connor Zary so effective and such a great story as a rookie when he arrived. And remember, we all heard about how pissed off he was when he got sent down to the AHL at the end of training camp and that sort of chip on his shoulder that he left with and the "I'm going to prove you guys wrong." I'm excited to see what Connor Zary having not lived up necessarily to the expectations he set for himself or many set for him this season, in large part due to injuries, I'm excited to see what that maybe return of the chip on the shoulder could mean for Connor's area. I think there's going to be a bit of a chip that comes as well in contract negotiations, because I do think after Connor's area didn't take the offensive step, and that's even by a point per game sort of ratio, not just overall. When he didn't take that step, I think it's cinched that it'll be a bridge deal and not a long-term whopper. And so I'm really fascinated to see Connor Zary's response, because he has the talent when healthy to be a top three scorer on the Flames. I think he can be a 60 or 65 point guy next season. Absolutely. I think he can do more at even strength than he's done. I'm just curious to see whether that sort of added fire that he's going to have based on the two injuries and the fact this season just didn't quite go the way he intended. That's what makes me so intrigued by Connor Zary next year. Obviously, we know he's going to be in a marquee role. I'm really curious what he can do with it.
You know, guys, I'm going to kind of, it's going to be boring, but we just spent the first half of the hour talking about what a Dustin Wolf contract extension could look like as early as this summer, Wilsey. And he's the guy for me, because it is so rare for a goalie of Dustin's age to burst onto the scene like he did. Like, I think we all three of us all believe Dustin Wolf had the potential to be this team's future number one. We all believe this guy was very, very highly touted for a reason, but none of us expected it to hit as quickly as it did, and for this guy to be grouped in the same conversation with the very best in the NHL, both historically and what we've seen this season. Like, the best goalies in the NHL this year have been Kemper and Logan Thompson and Vasilevsky and Connor Hellebuck and Philip Gustafson. I'm missing one or two. Oh, Stolarz in Toronto. And Dustin Wolf has been in that same conversation. You've got future Hall of Famers in that mix, like Vasilevsky and Hellebuck. You've got guys who have burst onto the scene this year, and Wolf is one of them. But Wolf's also freshly 24 years old, and I don't know what next year looks like for him. And I'm honestly, guys, I'm not expecting it to be poor next year. I'm not expecting it to be bad next year. But with the silliest position in all of professional sports, with a guy who is only a season into his career, with how up and down goaltending can be, even with the best in the business, like Wilsey, all year when we've talked about a guy like Yegor Sharangovich, you've talked about sometimes good players have bad seasons. Well, with a good goaltender, it's almost guaranteed that over the course of a career, you're going to have a year where you're flirting with 900 as opposed to flirting with 920. And whether it's Carey Price or Henrik Lundqvist or Connor Hellebuck or Andrei Vasilevsky, they've all had them multiple times over the course of their career where they just have a down year statistically. And so I want to see what year two looks like from Dustin Wolf. The league will have a bigger book on him, and there won't be any surprises. You're going to have guys who realize that, yeah, if you're going laterally on him, you can't, like, if it's a 2-on-1 next year and you've got the best players on the other team on a 2-on-1, there's going to be no hesitating. It's going to be pass shot, because they know that if you hesitate or hold that puck for even half a second, this guy who's so quick is going to be on his other post and probably make the stop on you. So I just, and what makes me confident that, yeah, some things will be different and shooters and teams will have a bigger book on Wolf next year, is that he knows that too. And this guy is so meticulous with the details in his game and with fixing or improving the quote-unquote weaknesses in his game that I'm not expecting a big step back like we do see. Most rookies in that position, if they have a great first year, they take a step back in their second year. It's like clockwork. I don't know if I'm expecting that with Dustin Wolf, and I'm really excited to see what year two looks like for this guy, because, Wilsey, he'll enter training camp next year as the number one goaltender, full stop. And yeah, that's different, and it's not what it was this year, and yet I'm expecting Dustin to be just as effective next year as he was this year. That's kind of the feel, the vibe you get from a player like him.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And for me, Pat, that's why I didn't go with Dustin Wolf, is because I'm so confident after what I saw in his first season as a full-time NHLer that, you know, we're just going to see an even better Dustin Wolf moving forward. I'm excited to see him next season, but I'm also expecting him to take another step. And he might have caught some teams off guard at the start, although there was certainly plenty of video of him, even at the AHL level. And, you know, he got in some games at the NHL level over the last couple of years. So with how in-depth teams go as far as their pre-scouts are concerned and trying to find weaknesses in the other teams and in their opponents' players, I think they knew what to expect from Dustin Wolf. Certainly they did as the season went along, and he still was an outstanding goaltender. So I'm just expecting more of the same. And, you know, if teams do make some sort of adjustments to try to get to Dustin Wolf, I'm expecting him, as you said, to make some adjustments and be an even better goaltender for the Flames next season. Wes, you stole my other guy, Connor Zary.
I was just going to ask you if you still had one more in the holster.
Well, I've got a third guy, but Connor Zary was my second guy. I just thought he looked so dynamic before that first knee injury, and I thought he was really snake-bitten offensively. You look at his final numbers this season, 14 goals, or sorry, that's the other guy that I'm going to go with. But as far as Connor Zary, 13 goals, which was one off his career high of 14, and 27 points in 54 games. So a half point a game guy. But again, I feel like those numbers don't really reflect how good he was and how dynamic he was for the Flames offensively prior to that first knee injury. So I could see Connor Zary, if he stays healthy next season, being a 50 to 60 point guy. And on a team that struggled to score for a good chunk of this season, that's pretty darn exciting from a Flames perspective. The other guy who comes to mind for me, and we talked about him a little bit earlier in the week, is Adam Klapka. Simply because he is such a unique player with his combination of size and speed and skill. And he was so raw, and we've watched him develop into a really good player at the AHL level. And I think we saw a pretty good player at the NHL level at the end of the season. And I think that he's going to have an opportunity to play top 9 minutes and to be a full-time player in this league next season. So he's another guy who I'm super intrigued by, simply because there aren't a lot of guys who are built like him who have the skill set that he does. So pretty exciting when you talk about all of these young players, whether it be Zane Parekh or Connor Zary or Dustin Wolf or Adam Klapka. The future does look pretty bright for the Flames from my position.
If I can add one name to the mix, and I say this, guys, mostly based on what I heard on exit day at the Saddle Dome, I'm going to be keeping really close tabs in the fall on Joel Farabee. And I thought the sort of fire that you saw from him in his end of season interview, I can't remember many guys who've described a season as embarrassing, but that was how he summed up his performance in both Philadelphia and Calgary. Like, I don't think, if you're not familiar with Joel Farabee's game, if I told you that the guy who finished this season in 86 for the Flames had been a 20 goal scorer multiple times in the NHL, I'm not sure you'd have guessed that. Like, I don't think we saw what can make Joel Farabee an effective player. I don't think we saw enough of what can make him effective anyways, and especially, you know, in what remains a fairly heavy division. I think Joel Farabee is capable of more. Just the way he left the Saddle Dome at the end of this season makes me really curious about what comes next.
And Wes, just to add to that, so Joel Farabee had the second worst PDO in the NHL this season. So that's a combination of shooting percentage and the opposition's save percentage. When I shared that with him, because Pat shared it with me, he was super surprised. And he didn't use that as a crutch to say, yeah, you know, the only reason I didn't have a good season is because I was unlucky. So I like that about Joel Farabee. I think he was unlucky. I do think he was snake bitten, a lot like Morgan Frost when he joined the Flames. But I've got a sneaking suspicion he'll put in the work during the offseason to put himself in a position to be a better player for this team. And for both him and Morgan, I think having an opportunity to settle into a new city and with a new organization over the offseason and press the reset button and hopefully build up their confidence again, because I suspect John Tortorella stripped it away for both of them. I think we could see big things from both of those former Flyers next season.
It's the Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg, as we continue along. So, gents, you know, I think back to a lot of comparisons this year to what we saw a decade ago, 14-15, where the Flames shocked the hockey world. They made the playoffs that year, won a round. Flames finished tied for a playoff spot, lose out on a tiebreaker this year. But again, we're one of the buzz stories of the hockey world with how much they surprised. And I think of the year after that season and how they took a significant step back. I think about Glenn Gullitson's second year after they made the playoffs, and in his first year, his second year, they took a significant step back. I think about Bill Peters in his first year. We didn't see all of Bill's second year, rightfully so, but we did see the team take a step back in year two under Peters. And we saw Daryl Sutter in his second full year, a big step back after they made the playoffs in his first full year. It seems to be this pattern where the Flames have a good year, but they don't follow it up and they don't get back to where they were. So I know they didn't make the playoffs this year, and so that maybe changes the way we think about it, but what in your mind needs to happen so that the Flames build positively on what we saw this year, as opposed to taking a step back and falling back like we've seen happen so many other times?
Well, I mean, they could have made the playoffs this year, probably should have made the playoffs this year, so I think it's a fair question asked, Pat. For me, what happened in 2021, 2022 was a one-off, because that was a really good Flames team. But during the offseason, they lost their top two offensive players in Johnny Gaudreau, who went to unrestricted free agency, and Matthew Tkachuk, who told the team he wasn't going to sign long-term, and they were put in a position to trade him. And yes, I was one of the people who, when they made that trade with the Panthers and got Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar, and then signed Nazem Kadri in free agency, I looked at the Flames and thought, well, yeah, a lot of talent went out the door, but a lot of talent came in the door. I think they can be a competitive team again. They weren't, at least not as far as getting to the playoffs. But in hindsight, I suppose I probably should have expected that. That's a lot of change. And change can be hard. And we saw that with Frost and Farabee this season with the Flames. The changes the team made during that 22-22 offseason were massive. So I think that was a bit of a one-off for me. But the reason I think it could be and probably will be different for the Flames this time around is because, at least in my first 11 seasons calling Flames games, when they took a step forward and thought that they were potentially ready to take another step forward, they got older. Whether that be making trades or signing guys in free agency, this Flames team is younger. And the cupboards aren't bare as far as draft picks and prospects and cap space are concerned. So I think they're in a lot different position now than they've been at any point in time in my 11 seasons calling their games, simply because they took a step this season, but they didn't do it by spending to the cap. They didn't do it by trading picks and prospects to get older players. They did it by getting younger. So I actually think that the Flames, because of that, and because, you know, these young players continue to develop and get better and take steps, whether that be a step from junior to pro like Zane Parakh, or a step from the AHL to the NHL like Dustin Wolf, I think that naturally they're going to get better because their young players are going to get better and they become a younger team over the last couple of years.
I don't know if this is the right way to answer this, guys, but when Pat says, you know, okay, well, what's important to not take a step back next season, I immediately think back to the last time that the Flames drastically exceeded expectations and the mistakes that were made trying to ensure that they took a further step ahead. The way that management of that time was fooled into thinking that they were closer than they were. And so while there's a lot of sort of on ice components for me that go into, okay, how do we make sure it's not a big step back? I don't think management, Craig Conroy in particular, obviously, and his hockey ops staff, I don't think they can get fooled by what happened this season. I don't think they can chase short-term gain. I really think I suppose it's important to not embrace, but be fine with a little bit of a step back if that's what it is. I don't think they should be aiming for it or planning for it or anything, but you know, if there is a step back, I think it's important to be patient with the long-term build and direction that they're on.
Yeah, that's kind of the way that I would actually phrase it. I wonder if the best way to not take a step back is just to continue with the plan. And because I think that you've got a group of veterans in there that believes in what's happening. I think Kadri and Coleman and Uyghur and the likes of that 6-7 person leadership veteran group, they believe in what's happening here. So I think by sticking with the plan and look, Rasmus Anderson might have to be traded, and that would be something that falls into, hey, we got to make this deal if we're not going to be able to get a contract done. But I think that there's a lot of belief from the veterans in the direction that this is going. And so I think having that belief in the way is that's how you're going to keep these guys as engaged and dialed as they were this year, from Kadri to Huberto to Uyghur, so on and so forth. So I think that is a check mark. And then as you continue to get younger, you hopefully replace some of your other players with better younger players. And so whether it's, you know, going back to your answer to begin the roundtable, Wilsey, if it's Parekh who is an upgrade on somebody, and if it is Kirkland who's an upgrade on Rooney as a full-time number four center, and if another young forward's able to make the group out of camp, and that's an upgrade on somebody else. And I just think continuing with this long-term plan that was 3 to 5 years, so now it's 2 to 4 years, just keep on doing that. And I think maybe they do take a slight step back, and instead of 96 points next year, they're 91 points. But if it is continuing on the path, then I think that is, A, the best way to avoid a significant step back for next season, and B, it's how to avoid things getting completely derailed. And then we really are, if things are completely derailed, then we really are into, again, mushy middle, mediocrity, all that type of stuff. Whereas right now, I think you can make a salient argument that that's not where they are, despite that's where they finished. If you all of a sudden divert from your plan, then you risk being there perpetually again, which is what nobody wants to see.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I do think the Flames were full value for where they finished with 96 points, tied for most in NHL history by a non-playoff team. Because for me, and I know there were some comparisons thrown out there during the course of the season, even for me, but this team did not fluke their way to a bunch of wins like that Findaway Flames team did back in 2014, 2015. Did they win a handful of games they probably didn't deserve to? Yes. They probably also lost a handful of games they didn't deserve to. So I think it evened out, and it wasn't a wacky season like that one was. But I just think they're in such a great spot where they can continue on the path that they've been on over the last couple of years. I do think in order to keep the veteran players fully engaged, they have to have a competitive team, and I believe that they will next season. But again, I hate to sound like a broken record because you guys know how much I love my vinyl, but because of the position Craig Conroy has put this team in, with all the cap space, with all the draft picks, with all the prospects, I think it gives them a lot of different options to try to be better next season, but not by mortgaging the future. They can be better next season and set themselves up to continue to get better by getting a little bit younger. And that might not mean drafting guys and waiting 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years and hoping they develop. Maybe they can use some of those picks and prospects to get NHL-ready players who are ready to step in and have an impact today and tomorrow. So that's why I'm excited for the offseason to see what happens, and excited for next season as well.
All right, Wilsey, that'll wrap up the final Daily Flames roundtable of the season. That's 7 months of Daily Flames.